welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, recorded at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Show number 55, and this is what, October 14th, 2003. For the next hour, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman, ladies and gentlemen, Don Shaw.
Yeah, Mr. Tom, we're doing the old Double Nickel Show today, man.
You got that right,
55.
Don. Uh-huh, exactly. Don Patterson, hi there.
Yes, sir, still recovering from my third bout this year with poison ivy.
Yeah.
Third bout.
Ever since I've moved up here 6 years ago. Before that, I never had it in my life.
Used to be
a Boy Scout, camped out in the woods, very active hiker, camper. And now came to Lufkin to retire, and Poison Ivy, 1, 2, 3.
Poison Ivy City.
I'll tell you what, that stuff is something else.
Yeah, you know, and I've heard some interesting things about it. You can, sometimes you might even get it off your pet. You know, I didn't know that.
Is that right?
Yeah, they say if you know, your cat or your dog can.
My goodness, I didn't know that. My name's Tom Houston, but right now, ladies and gentlemen, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, here he is, Phil Haar. I say the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show. Here he is, Phil Haar.
Tom, I see a note in his chair. A note.
Get that, man.
I got that note. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Check with you next week. I'm in California or Washington or Canada.
Or somewhere. What a deal, man.
I think he's on an assignment.
Do you mean we're flying this thing on the seat of our pants?
Yeah.
My goodness gracious. That's scary in itself.
Hell of a deal, isn't it?
Is he on assignment, you think?
I think he may be on assignment. That's true. That's what they say.
That's what they say.
Networks. Phil Haar, ladies and gentlemen, is on assignment.
So what is his idea? Itinerary, you know?
Well, let's see. Last time I talked to him, he was in San Francisco. And
Fisherman's Wharf, I'll bet you.
He had been there. Yes, he had. And he was on his way. He was going to go into Seattle.
Yeah.
Then he was talking about crossing over into British Columbia and Vancouver.
I see. So we could either find him on assignment in San Francisco, sleepless in Seattle, or maybe intocinated in Vancouver, right?
That would be possible. Good possibility.
That would be my guess.
Stay intoxicated in Vancouver.
I see.
That's probably the best choice.
Anyway, he's on vacation, and he's been gone now, what? He left the next day.
Last Wednesday, in fact, didn't he?
And flew on out to San Francisco, and I guess...
And talked to some blind folks that he ran across, met there somewhere, that have already subscribed to the list. Isn't that a deal?
I saw that post, and this guy was a musician, I understand.
Yeah.
And Luann and their friends were in the club. And they were sitting there in the old booth or table or whatever they were sitting at.
Hadn't even made it to Vancouver yet, right?
You're right. And the guy's wife, the wife of the guy that was blind, noticed him and went over to the table and said, "If you guys have a few minutes on the break, I'd like to introduce you to my husband, who is totally blind." And there they were. And this guy, he told him about the Blind Handyman Show. He told him about Blind Like Me, which he had never heard of before.
Yeah.
And he signed up.
And they subscribed to the list.
And he even mentioned on the little post that he did that he had met Phil and his lovely wife, Luann.
Well, see, and I told you he was on assignment out there drumming up business, huh?
Probably.
Probably doubled our audience.
Drumming up list members.
My gosh.
So I wonder
what that guy played, did Phil say?
I don't know. He may have said.
The bass, I'm thinking.
Was it the bass? Maybe it was.
Bass guitar, I'm thinking.
But I know he was a member of the band.
Oh, yeah.
But I wonder if Mr. Parr got up and indulged.
If they asked him to, I guarantee you.
You don't think he would ask them.
He probably had a couple of CDs he pulled out and tried
probably.
To
say,
you don't think, you don't think he asked them.
You never know, but I bet he did.
They probably went out on break. That's how they met him and saw him out there selling his CDs.
Peddling those CDs, boy.
Probably so. I would think so.
The poor producer and creator.
Well, what a deal.
Oh, my goodness. He'll do anything to sell a CD. Only kidding, Phil, if you're listening to this.
Thomas, do we have any email today?
Yes, we do. I was, if he hears this, we better be careful, I guess.
That's right.
He is the creator, you know.
Yeah, and if he hears it, he may think we could do it without him. We wouldn't want him to think that. Well, if it hadn't been for his timely phone call today,
exactly, we wouldn't be on.
Might not have been here.
It says, "Hello, I'm a 57-year-old congenitally blind man, and have listened to a few of your shows. I haven't listened to all of them, but I want to be honest. I think you do an extraordinary job. And if you're interested, I would like to do a show on changing the mixer valve cartridge in a shower. I know it's basic, but as you well know, it can be crucial in home maintenance."
We will be calling on you one day.
Exactly. Anybody that says that's basic.
Yeah, we will be calling your number.
Plumber. He said, yep. "If not, I just want to let you know that I really appreciate what you're doing for the blind community. This comes from Kenneth Sawicki," I believe is the way you say it.
All right, Kenneth.
Kenneth, we appreciate that.
Great. Keep on listening. And like I say, anybody that calls that basic,
we will call you.
That's right.
We'll be in touch.
The more, the merrier, I guarantee you. I'm looking for some feedback on this idea of mine. This is another one. We have a fold-down stepladder in our kitchen to access the attic. Now, it occurs to me that this is a weak spot in regards to heat loss, even though it has some styrofoam on it to give it some help. So what I suggest is build a frame, staple some R30 to it, and before I close the trap, put it over the hole so that when the door closes, that frame will cover the folded-up ladder and trap like a blanket. Then when I go up there for any reason, just lift the thing, move it aside, put it back before closing the trap back up. And this comes from Dave. And Dave, do we have any comment on that, gentlemen?
Yeah, I think Dave's on the right track there, and I guess we had sort of browsed his email before the show started, and I didn't hear it right the first time. Building a frame, or in a sense you could say a box, because obviously he knows, but maybe someone else doesn't. When that thing is folded up in the ceiling, it's not, you know, it's up in the attic somewhere.
It
has a pretty high profile. It's not just level. So you would have to build maybe a what would it be, five-sided thing with the bottom open, where the staircase goes up into it.
Uh-huh.
And then you could cover it. You know, you can buy sheet insulation, probably 3/4 or 1 inch thick. You could build it out of that, say maybe a little 1x2 frame.
Oh, sure.
And it would be light and manageable, and it wouldn't be too fragile. I mean, when you pull down your staircase, then you go up and set it aside.
You can just set it aside.
I think it's a great idea.
I do too.
It's actually a good point because, you know, one thing we know for sure, electric bills keep getting higher and higher.
They keep getting higher.
They tell you, all the utility companies tell you, and they even have people that will come out to your house and tell you your weak spot. So
yeah.
Anytime you can patch something, and that would go, you know, with especially wintertime coming.
Winter
out,
or summer, either one would be a good deal on that.
And you know, check your wall plugs for the little styrofoam, the little rubber, foam rubber inside, especially on your outside walls. Check your door stripping. And, man, that right there would probably save a few BTUs.
I've got to go up on the roof here in the next week or so and cover the turbines, you know, the spinning turbines. It's time to cover them for the winter.
Well, while you're doing it, once you get that helicopter to do mine.
Your big high two-story roof there.
Well, in the roof that looks like a church house, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's humongous.
Steep.
Pitch.
It really is.
So mine will remain uncovered. Unless the new homeowner, you know, I'm a renter now.
You are a renter, in fact.
The new homeowner wants to come over there and do that.
That's right. You are.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to get on that roof of his.
That roof's bad news, man.
Talk about a pitch, buddy. That would be, you would have to hang on for dear life, I guarantee you.
But that is the new homeowner's problem right now, isn't
yes,
it, Don
sir.
Patterson?
That's right.
There's one from Chris. She says, "Hello, folks. I live in a 2-floor condo apartment building. I live in the 2nd floor. The water pressure in my kitchen faucet has dropped dramatically. I believe that I share the same pipes with the person who lives right in the apartment underneath me in the 1st floor. Now, when I asked that person if the water pressure in her kitchen has changed, she said no. The water pressure in her apartment is as good as it has always been. Is there anything I could do on my own to solve this problem before I call in a plumber and pay an arm and a leg? Any ideas would be highly appreciated. Warm regards, Chris."
Well, Donald, you
I just got one quick thing. If it's just the kitchen sink, one thing you might check is underneath the sink, if it's got shut-off valves, to make sure that the valve is open pretty good and not just open, just a dab bit. Might check that right off the bat. And we were talking again, maybe the strainer. Unscrew the on the end of the faucet and make sure that it's clean. And other than that, I guess depending, it didn't really say it was more than that one faucet, did it?
No, she says it's in her kitchen.
In the kitchen only, I would think.
And I would say, I know in the particular house I'm living in, the city has been doing a lot of work on the water. Now, I don't know if that's just, you know, coincidence or whatever. But anyway, every time they turn the water, then you get a lot of dirt and stuff in it when it comes back on, or
yep,
the sediment out of your hot water heater. To make a long story short, the strainer, and she may not be familiar with it, but on like you said, on the end where the water comes out, and you might have to take a wrench, and you want to use a rag or something with,
that's right,
with your pliers so you won't damage the strainer. But if you do, you can go buy another one. It's probably a dollar and a half item at a hardware store, and I think that's what they call it, a strainer. But
I think
anyway,
so.
It's a little screen. If you unscrew it, and it's probably as big as a quarter,
yeah,
diameter,
and quarter
thickness. It's probably an inch, maybe an inch thick. It's got threads on it, and it will just unscrew. And in there is a little screen filter.
Maybe several little screens,
several
little things.
Yeah, you want to be careful. You might wind up with a handful of little parts.
You might.
Little rubber gasket. And you can clean them, just wash them out. But the best thing to do is take that old one, go buy you a new one.
Yeah,
perhaps
cheap.
Y'all have had some maintenance problems on your water at the condos, or
yep,
and it may or may not. You know, you'd think, well, if it did yours, why didn't it do that lady's? But sometimes it just doesn't work. At my house, it's my washer that stops up all the time.
Yeah,
the washer and the ice maker for the icebox and the kitchen sink. But the other hydrants work fine, so
but
might
quick,
give that a try.
Quick way to tell would be just to unscrew it, take it off, and before you even clean it, just turn on the water and see if you have good pressure then.
Exactly. There was one response to that as far as the posting on the group page.
Okay.
And this is going to be a little bit redundant because I believe Don already mentioned it. Is check under the sink to be sure you haven't bumped the valve.
Right.
With something being stored under there.
Uh-huh.
This person says they accidentally turned off their hot water valve once and got into all sorts of trouble by not troubleshooting from the simple to the costly.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, it could be. I mean, you know, you could, after that, it's sort of like, you know, when you have an appliance that don't work, the first thing you do is see if it's plugged in.
Uh-huh.
You know, the strainer up top, then the valve down there, looks
yep,
like if she... And then you might feel from the valve up to your sink, and, you know, those are usually either copper or plastic lines, little feed lines. If they may get a crimp in it. You know, if you've bumped it, if something has bent it,
yeah,
smashed it, or either if it's this neoprene or like a little plastic flexible tube, it could have a kink in it. But
oh,
most
sure,
likely, I'll lay a dollar to it on it.
I bet it's the strainer.
Top, yeah.
I bet it is too. All right, we need more email, don't we, Don Shaw? What's that email address?
Well, you need to send that email, send those questions, comments, whatever you got to blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
Hey, all right. And we need some. We really
do. We do. We could use that email.
Everybody's posting on the list and avoiding sending us any email.
Uh-huh.
But that's okay. We pull them off the list anyway.
Oh, yeah. We get list mail, which will work good.
When we come back, we're going to have a special guest who is my brother, and we're going to be talking about fire prevention, the ABCs of fire prevention, and we'll be back with more of the Blind Handyman in just a moment.
Hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind like me. Lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's blind like me at txucom.net. Contact information. information. Blind Handyman Listserv. Blind Handyman Subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman Subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman Subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information. Hi, everybody. This is Phil Parr. We're enjoying putting these little programs together for you. We hope you're enjoying them, too. We've been on with the Blind Handyman for more than a year now. We've done 10 Blind Like Me shows. We're having one little problem. You can help us with it. We always need guests for both shows, and we sometimes have a problem finding them. If you'd like to be a guest on either show, or you know someone who might make a good interview, email us at one of the following addresses. Blind Handyman, all one word, at hotmail.com, or Blind Like Me, all one word, at txucom.net. Also, if you have ideas for future shows, include them in your email. We look forward to hearing from you. And please tell your friends about the shows. Thanks again from all of us at the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me.
The talk of the blind community. This is the Blind Handyman. We invite your correspondence at our address, blindhandyman at hotmail.com. To be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, with more of the Blind Handyman, here's Tom Houston.
Okay, we're back and we're trying to, like we said earlier, we're flying by the seat of our pants today. But on the show with us today is none other than my younger brother, Gordon. And we're going to be talking about fire safety, I understand. Is that right, Gordon?
That is absolutely correct.
Say hello to the guys. I got Don Patterson and Don Shaw here.
How you doing, Don?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Gordon, it's Don Patterson. Glad to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back with you.
Yeah, good to have you.
I want to say that I really appreciate what you guys do. I think you have a wonderful show. And I think you deserve more credit than you get.
We're going to have him on again next week.
Yeah, there you go.
Boy,
we will, won't we?
I guarantee you, Gordon, a check is in the mail. Yeah,
that's right.
I appreciate that. No, I think it's a blessing what you do. I think it's a wonderful cause. And I really appreciate being a part of it.
Well, thank you, sir.
Good to have you here, man.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
What do you mean, Gordon, when you say the ABCs of fire prevention? Just what exactly does that mean?
Well, ABCs. And usually that's the way a fire extinguisher is rated, as to what it will extinguish. A, being defined as paper, wood, and cloth. B is usually gas, grease, and oils. And C is electrical. Then you have D that will extinguish rare metals. And it's very important when you select a fire extinguisher that you select it for the environment in which it, you know, occupies. For instance, if you had a clothing store where you had a lot of paper, wood, and cloth, you would want to go with the number one extinguishing agent, which is water.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you would go with a water pressure extinguisher, as well as a sprinkler system, of course. But if you're in the kitchen and you got a grease fire, you sure don't want to put water on it.
No.
So you would want to go with a sodium bicarb, a dry chemical, something that would extinguish that fire and not spread it all over the house. And of course, we all know about electrical. Electrical is a hard thing to extinguish. So you go with a C-rated. But normally, you have an A-class extinguisher, you have a BC extinguisher, or you have an ABC extinguisher, and then there's an ABCD, so it gets pretty complicated. But in the home, they make a general-purpose, multi-purpose fire extinguisher that is called an ABC, dry chemical fire extinguisher. And this pretty well covers about everything you would have in the home. And of course, they range in capacities of 2.5 pounds on up to, you can even get a 20-pounder, which is pretty heavy to carry around.
Uh-huh.
I recommend a 5-pounder for the home. Anything bigger than that, you need to get out of the house and call the fire department.
Run like the wind.
Because this chemical that's in these extinguishers will multiply itself about 12 times. So you've got about 60 pounds, really. in a 5-pound extinguisher.
So, Gordon, I don't want to interrupt, but now would be a good time, you know, since most of our audience are blind. Wonder if you could kind of describe that 5-pound.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. It's about the diameter of let's compare it to a 2-liter Coke.
Okay.
That's about the size of it. Maybe a little larger. And, of course, it's equipped with a valve and a pull pin, and they have a directional nozzle on them. You can get them with a hose. But for the blind, the nozzle would be adequate.
Right.
And you could just pull the pin, and then you push the handles together, and it discharges out the nozzle, causing a very nice pattern, not a spray pattern, but it's a cone pattern, and you sweep it back and forth across the base of the flame.
So it'd be like a shotgun. You could just point it in the general direction and just go with it.
Yeah, and just sweep back and forth, and you would extinguish the fire.
And when you activate it, when you squeeze those levers together, does it exhaust, does it empty all of its contents, or can you stop it?
You can stop it, but...
Probably won't want to.
Well, you probably won't want to, but if you do stop it, you have to have it recharged, because what happens, that dry chemical gets in the valve stem.
Right.
And it allows the nitrogen to bleed off.
Okay, so the best thing to do is when you get ready, mean business, you need to just use it all, right?
Yeah, and then go have it recharged.
Okay.
Okay.
And they're very reasonable to recharge. They're not expensive at all.
I was just going to, back before we get away from this point, let's just say you have one of these ABC fire extinguishers around your house, and you bought this 8 years ago. This is just an example. 10 years ago, just pick a year.
Uh-huh.
Will it, after so many years, not work when you need it, or do they have a life expectancy, or what?
Well, yes, it does. The cylinder on it, I think, has a hydrotest date of about every 12 years. So every 12 years, that cylinder should be emptied and pressure tested. And that's because you could get corrosion inside the cylinder.
Okay.
And it could spring a leak. I don't think it would ever explode and hurt you, but it may not work when you go to use it.
Okay.
But they're very good. The 12-year hydrotest date, it can hang on the wall and it'll work. But if you ever use just a little bit of it now, the next time you go to use it, it won't work because that nitrogen comes off. So if you use a little bit or a whole lot, you need to have it recharged.
That's good to know. Okay. That's a good point.
It's unlike your carbon dioxide extinguishers where you can discharge a little bit and shut it off. See, there's nothing there obstructing the valve stem.
Yeah, yeah.
Where with the dry chemical, it does.
Okay. Because, that's something that folks may need to know down the line.
Right. Well, you know, this time of year especially, we have... our heat's beginning to come on. You know, we're getting some cool nights. The heat's beginning to come on. And what people do is they have electric space heaters. They set them around, and they turned them down low in the spring of the year. But they didn't turn them off. But it's been there all summer, and they're just throwing garments around on it and maybe pushed a chair up to it. Well, then we get into the fall, and the temperature drops, and the thermostat says, oh, it's cold. We better heat the house. Well, what you've got now is a fire because all those garments laid on those heaters. That is why in the fall of the year you have more house fires than you do any other time.
I believe that.
It's a time that we all should take notice of what our heat's doing.
Because talking about the fall, and I just got a quick little story here.
Okay.
The house that your brother there, Mr. Tom, lived in, and when they made a move, we moved into the house that they moved into, and that was what time in November, late October, November?
November. It was in November. Yeah, the early part of November.
And I guess for our part of the world down here, that's kind of when you start using the heat. I mean, it wasn't a week after Tom had moved out of that house and we had moved in. My wife had woke up about 4 in the morning and said, "You know, I smell smoke." And sure enough, I'd run around to the other side of the house there where the furnace was located and open the door into the furnace. This was one of the furnaces down in the house rather than in the attic.
Uh-huh.
And, man, we'd had a little fire, and talking about the fall, inside of the furnace. And
well, you know, it's a serious business because it sits there all summer. And then all of a sudden it's called upon to do its job.
And that was like late at night, early in the morning.
It was like 4 in the morning.
She's lucky she even woke up and smelled it.
Yeah, no kidding.
What was burning about it. Do you recall?
I think some insulation that had gotten inside of it some way.
I see.
Is what caught on fire.
One of the other things is if you have gas, as you know, we have carbon monoxide, which is very dangerous and fatal.
You know,
if high enough concentration, you breathe a high enough concentration. But anybody who's got gas floor furnaces or they got gas space heaters or even a gas furnace, if it's got any age on it, if the heat exchanger's busted on it, you're going to get that carbon monoxide in your house.
That's right.
And those things need to be checked, especially, you know, they make ventless gas heaters today. They don't even have a vent. Those things have to burn clean, and they need to be checked.
Uh-huh.
If you have a vented heater, the vent needs to be checked to make sure it's working. If you have a gas water heater, see, you still have all this potential for that carbon monoxide. And all these things come into play. They need to be checked regularly as well as installing smoke detectors in the house.
Yeah, speaking of smoke detectors, and we had some discussion about this on the list. It hadn't been too long ago. Someone was talking about that they had electric smoke detectors and, you know, was having some problems with with them going off when they shouldn't be.
Uh-huh.
And that's just, you know, they talked about the reasons for that and one thing and another, but just a suggestion or a point here just to ask you about this, talking about fire prevention. What do you think? If you do move into a house or a mobile home or whatever and have the electric smoke detectors, what do you think about having at least one or two battery detectors in case your electricity should go off? Or?
Well, my opinion is if they're just electric, run off your AC power, take them out and throw them as far as you can.
That's kind of what they said on the list.
And you go to your local electrical supply house. They sell one that's electrical and has a battery in it. Okay? It's both.
Which should be the way to go.
Yeah, and you install that where the one you threw away was.
Uh-huh.
And then you're adequately protected even if the power goes off.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a lot of houses, they do put electric only.
Yeah.
And
when those things go to beeping, they're telling you that battery's bad. Don't take the battery out just to shut it up.
Go
buy a new battery and put it in it.
Yeah, sure.
And, I always like the ones that carry the 9-volt battery. They're my favorite.
That's the ones we've always bought with the 9-volt.
Because the battery is very inexpensive. Holds up for about a year. But people ought to make it a routine, say, when the time changes every year to change all the batteries in their detectors. Don't even wait for them to go down, you know.
Yeah, 9-volt batteries are cheap.
Oh, yeah, they're inexpensive. Compared to your life, it's nothing.
And so, Gordon, so back with our, so if you, we're talking about the home, the average home, you know, say three-bedroom house, whatever. So how many fire extinguishers and how many smoke detectors? I mean, where's a good placement for these?
They recommend that you put them near the exits.
Okay.
Okay. That way you know exactly where they are and you know you've got it. You can go get it. At least you have the opportunity. You know you can go out the door. If it's a small fire, you can put it out. You put those by your exit. Now, your smoke detectors, that's a different story. Don't put them in your kitchen.
Okay.
That's a bad place for them because every time your wife opens the oven door, it's going to activate
it's
it
gonna
because
go
they're heat sensitive.
Uh-huh.
And heat rises straight to the ceiling, and that's going to activate your smoke detector. So you're better off to get them out of your kitchen, but yet put them, say if you got three bedrooms, I'd put one in the hall. That way every bedroom would reference it.
Okay.
And I would put one on the other end of the house, but not in the kitchen.
That makes sense.
Now, on the what we call them smoke detectors, Gordon, but is it heat that does it and or the smoke? I mean, how does that work? I know my mom, one time I had one kind of close. She lived with me for a while. She's old. She smoked, and every once in a while it'd go off, and I thought figured it was her cigarette smoke.
Well, that's a possibility. But usually they're ionization product of combustion type detectors.
Right.
So they're heat sensitive, and they're sensitive to dust particles. You know, you can actually take a cigarette and blow the ashes into the detector, and it'll go off faster than if you hold it up to let the smoke.
Really?
See? But now that's good because they're built that way, so normal cigarette smoking won't bother them.
Okay.
Because that smoke rises to the ceiling, all right, but it's cold smoke, what we call cold smoke. It takes a pretty good concentration to get in that combustion chamber and activate it.
Okay.
But if you get heat and it rises quickly to the ceiling, and you get that sudden change, then it's going to activate it. Or if you get particles of combustion, it will activate it.
So if you put one, let's say, in your hall across from the bathroom door, for an example, you take a shower, you open the bathroom door, and some steam comes out, could that set it off?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It could.
Okay.
They make detectors of all kinds. You know, they have them with photo cells where they actually see it. And then they have them that are rate of rise. You know, you get nothing but a 15-degree change in the temperature will activate them.
Okay.
You know, they make all kinds of them, and they're all good. But typically in a house, it's a product of combustion, ionization-type detector.
Okay.
That's normally what you see for a home.
I got something else for you.
Okay.
Let's just say you did have a little fire, maybe either a little kitchen fire or maybe a waste paper basket or something, just, you know, a small fire.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you break out your trusty fire extinguisher there,
mm-hmm.
and you pull the pin, pull the trigger, and release the contents and release all of it onto the fire. You get your fire in your waste paper basket, let's say, put out from that cigarette that you, that ashtray that you emptied that you shouldn't have.
Okay,
you get it put out.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make too big of a mess as far as the little fire went, the little flame. But then how big of a mess or how hard is the chemical from the smoke detector going to be to clean up?
Well, you can take a simple vacuum cleaner and vacuum everything and then just dust it down, and you will eliminate it.
Okay.
It does make a mess, but it doesn't make near the mess that a pile of ashes of a home. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So no kidding.
It is a little trouble. You could go to alternative extinguishers. It costs you a lot of money. They make one that used to be called halon, but, you know, due to the ozone layer, I think they banned halon, and then they went to they got a product now they call FM200 that is sold in some handheld portable units, which is nothing but a chemical that causes the molecules that make a fire to separate, and it will extinguish. And there is no chemical residues.
Okay. I always was curious about that.
The A rating on it.
It's got a what now?
The A rating on it. It isn't really recommended for paper, wood, and cloth.
Uh-oh.
Ah.
See? So it's really more for the other. So, you know, you have to kind of watch it. Even though it's a wonderful product, it has its place. But really, I don't think it, in a home it's something you'd want. Now, you know, something like that could be used in a boat.
Right.
Or on your car, even. You wouldn't want to squirt dry chemical down in the engine of your car, you know, through the air cleaner.
Yeah.
You know, you could do it. You could actually use this FM200 and put it in your air cleaner and it'd stall your engine.
Okay.
I mean, it works that well.
So, Gordon, if we're going to outfit a home with, say, fire extinguishers and the right amount of smoke detectors, let's talk a little bit about expense. If we're going to buy this 5-pounder and, say, have one in the garage, maybe one in the kitchen or wherever you think they are to go, what are we talking money-wise?
Well, you can usually go to Lowe's or Home Depot or a place like that, and you can purchase one for anywhere from $19.95 up to $39.95. And get one for each exit, and then go buy you a couple of smoke detectors, one for each end of the house, and you're usually pretty well protected. If you have multi-levels now, I recommend two on each level.
Right, and one in the firewell, in the stairwell, or thereabouts?
Yeah, well, if you've got it in the hall, we all know stairwells act as chimneys in the event of a fire. But you better believe that wherever that fire is, it's going to hit the ceiling and just fly across it.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. The important thing is that it notifies you and gives you an opportunity to escape before, you know, you're harmed.
Right.
And, but this is the time of year that everybody should take notice.
Oh, sure.
I myself now, I just examined my boiler, my water heater, and my gas heater I have in my basement. And I made sure my carbon monoxide detectors were working. I have a daughter and a grandson that lives in the basement of my home. And that's their only hope because, you know, you could be asleep and just go on into a deeper sleep.
Oh, sure.
You really have to be careful.
Well, yeah, I protected myself pretty good. We live in a two-story house. It's a story and a half, but,
yeah.
You know, we don't have a fire escape. There's windows upstairs. I do not have a fire escape, and there's only one way up, and that's the staircase inside, you know. So I've got
well, you need to create you a – you know, they make rope ladders.
Right.
You could get one and place it in one of your windows and make sure the window is freed up.
That's a good idea.
Where you could escape because you do need a fire escape.
Absolutely.
Of course, if push come to shove, I'm sure you wouldn't hesitate to jump.
Would have to do the jump. Would have to do it, wouldn't you?
Getting burned pretty bad, you'd go on out, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. You would have to jump.
But that would hurt you a lot, you know, hurt you bad.
Absolutely.
You need some means of getting out. And I strongly urge anybody with a two-story house that does not have an escape route to do something like
that.
Well,
and you bring up an interesting point, and back again, we're talking about, you know, to our audience being blind, and boy, I tell you, nobody, they really need to plan an escape route. You
they
know?
Do.
Oh,
and
for
they,
sure.
They need to have a sighted person examine their heat and what have you to make sure that there's, you know, that they're safe.
We just recently talked about that and getting your furnace and things examined for the winter and checked out.
Yeah.
Well, Gordon, maybe you know about this. Well, two questions, kind of.
Okay.
One, like, do local fire departments sometimes say they'll come, probably especially maybe for a blind person, and go over their weaknesses, you know, in their house?
They would be glad to.
And also, do you know, like, if you had the proper amount of fire extinguishers and all that, you know, on your insurance, home insurance, like you used to, if you don't smoke, you get a break. If you don't do this or that, I wonder if you have all this proper stuff, is your insurance a little cheaper?
I think only if you install a fire alarm system
okay.
and have it monitored, does it reflect in your insurance premium.
Okay, well, that's interesting to know.
But for your own self pleasure, you need to have it, you know. You
right.
need to know that you've got it.
Well, let me ask you this that you mentioned about fire alarm. My wife and I are building a new house, first
uh-huh.
really new house for either of us.
Uh-huh.
And the guy said that they were wiring it for, like, an alarm system, a burglar, I assume, you know, windows and doors.
Right.
But what would we have to add to that? I mean, like I say, if it was ADT or Brinks or somebody, I guess they do it all. So if it's wired for that, is that gonna be my fire protection or what?
Yes, it actually has the ability to distinguish a break-in from a fire.
Okay, that's interesting.
About what triggers the mechanics of it,
okay.
the box of it. And by that, when they receive the call, and of course it's all done electronically, they receive the call, they know that it's a fire or a robbery.
Right.
And they know the proper authorities to contact. So, you know, that is a good, but not everyone can afford that, but that is the ultimate if you can afford it.
Right. Well, we haven't signed up for any service. He just said as a rule, because actually we're kind of out and it's going to be kind of in a rural area, and he said, I wire them, you may not want it, but it's going to be wired in case you do. So,
be ready for it.
Well, you're talking to a man that has experienced a house fire.
Right, okay.
And that's why I can't preach safety enough. I have been through it. It is a horrible experience, and it's devastating to your family.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And I don't have the words to describe it to you. So, you know, I advise anybody to avoid it at all costs.
Well, yeah, you know, not to mention the safety your personal safety and of your loved ones, but just the items that you lose.
That you cannot replace.
That, exactly.
Stuff that you treasured. Wasn't
right.
worth nothing to anybody else.
Right.
But it was to you. And you wanted to keep it, and now it's gone. And that's sad. I mean, it really is.
And that brings on another thing. I might talk this same area is like your important papers and everything. Talk about fire little boxes that are fireproof. I mean, how do you?
Yeah, they make file cabinets that are fireproof. Of course, I've got to tell you, they weigh about 500
pounds. Yeah, that's the truth.
I happen to have a couple of them, and I know I have to get hand trucks and two or three people to move them.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But any of your valuable documents. If you can store them in a place like that, if you do have a fire, then, of course, you can always find them. And I recommend anybody that's got any valuable papers, and all of us have some.
Oh, yeah.
You don't necessarily have to get a big old file cabinet, but you could get a smaller cabinet that is fireproof and store your documents in there. As well as, you know, we kid people around here about burying their money in fruit jars. Put your money in that.
What a deal.
Safety deposit box, too.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a lot of things people can do. Another thing that I recommend, and this is something that took me by surprise, when you have a house fire, the first thing the insurance company wants you to do is fill out a proof of loss. And the proof of loss is fantastic, but I want to see you do it. Because, high in the world, when you're devastated and you're in a terrible frame of mind anyway, are you going to sit down and fill out something, a document, stating everything that you lost and the value of it?
I don't know. That could be a major problem.
Yeah. So a lot of people, they are companies that will come in and document all that. Or you could video it.
That's what I was just fixing to say.
You could video it. And you say, well, you know, that's not going to happen to me. I didn't think it was going to happen to me either. But by God, it will happen.
Oh, it can. Oh, sure it can.
So they say that, you know, in our lifetime, we're going to have at least one devastating blow, and that's, I got mine.
You know, Gordon, it's real interesting. My wife now, girlfriend at the time, talk about, you know, carelessness or whatever, but came home from work. She's a school teacher, and she came in, and her dog was out in the back yelping, and she needed to go, wanted to see her and get fed and take her for a walk. And so she had walked in to boil some eggs, so she had turned the fire on to go out, and then went left the pot to go out and see about the dog, and inadvertently she had turned on the wrong burner. So when she stuck her head back in the door, she had, flames shooting up to the ceiling. She had left a potato chip bag on the other burner, and she had turned on that burner.
Under the bag.
That's bad.
And so, anyway, to make a long story short, she did some serious damage. And you might, since you're, like, in the inspection and know all about it, you know, two things, excellent insurance. And because she wasn't ever in danger, she did the right thing. And also, we had an excellent recovery company here, a restoration company that your insurance deals with. You know, happens to be a local guy, even, you know, in advertising. And they really did a first-rate job, you know. And you might.
Well, that's basically, you know, we hired a company. Came in and they photographed my entire house.
Right.
They took all my furnishings to a warehouse. Everything that was salvageable was cleaned up, and of course, when the house was finished, they brought it back. And but there again, the damage they do, you know, they lost some of my stuff. They caused damage to certain items in my house.
Right.
And at the time all of this happens to you, you're not concerned about stuff like that. It's after the fact that you discover what's happened.
Yeah.
And there's no recourse. You can't do anything about it.
Right.
So you just have to swallow it. But what I'm trying to point out, my point is that this is what happens if you allow a fire to damage your home.
Right.
And so the best thing is, don't say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to instill in people is please take all the necessary precautions, because believe you me, that is so much easier than the other side of the coin.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, sure.
And, And there again, with blind folks, I mean, knowing where their stuff is and then, you know, knowing the way out, and then, and then a lot of them have dogs that, you know, that they use. They need to have the all planned out, and just having the, like you said, if you could outfit a house, if you had to have five fire extinguishers at $20 a pop, so you're talking $100, say $150 would get you down the road a long ways.
Sure would.
Well, I was talking to Tom, and he one of the most fascinating things to me about people that are blind is how they see things. And you guys, you've watched the truth, and Phil included, when you talk to you all about something you have never seen, and you sit right there and tell me all about it, knocks me off my feet. It is amazing. And just the fact you can't see don't mean you can't do anything you want to do.
Well, yeah. Oh, sure.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It just floors me, and I've talked to Tom about that a lot because it is so impressive.
Lots of folks doing a lot of things, man.
I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. But y'all are wonderful, and I love your show.
Well, we're glad to have another faithful listener.
Y'all go back and listen to the archives and listen to some of the other shows, you know. I really enjoy listening to them. I'll be working in my desk, and I'll have it on listening to it.
We've covered some ground, haven't we, since we started this last summer?
How many shows have you got under your belt?
55
This
today.
Is 5-5.
Because you only have 49 posted.
We do, and we got to catch up the archives here. We've been talking about that lately, and the archives are supposed to be updated here soon.
Okay. I just really enjoy listening. listening to it. It's a wonderful thing. But
well, we appreciate you being here.
You have certainly done a good job once again, my friend.
Well, I'll tell you what, the pleasure is on this end, believe me.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've learned some things today.
We have.
Fire prevention.
We certainly have.
And selecting smoke detectors and fire extinguishers. And we appreciate it, Gordon.
And,
we really do.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And remember, you can always contact your local fire department. They'll assist you in any capacity.
Okay.
And it's free.
Yep.
You know, and they sometimes will give families smoke detectors. They do sell them, but they sell them real cheap.
Okay.
Keep that in mind, okay?
All right.
But y'all keep up the good work.
Well, thank you,
sir. I will hang in.
And you're a very good guest. We're going to have you back soon, Gordon.
Well, I hope so. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
You have a good day, and we'll talk to you later.
And you do the same.
Yeah, Gordon, we enjoyed it.
Thanks, Gordon.
I enjoyed it, too. Y'all take care.
All righty. And we'll be back with more of the Blind Handyman in just a moment.
Blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
Contact information.
Blind like me. Blind like me. Lowercase all one word at txucom.net. That's blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman listserv. blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Contact information.
blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Blind like me at txucom.net. blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your
contact information.
Hi, everybody. This is Phil Parr. We're enjoying putting these little programs together for you. We hope you're enjoying them, too. We've been on with the Blind Handyman for more than a year now. We've done 10 Blind Like Me shows. We're having one little problem. You can help us with it. We always need guests for both shows, and we sometimes have a problem finding them. If you'd like to be a guest on either show, or you know someone who might make a good interview, email us at one of the following addresses. Blind Handyman, all one word, at hotmail.com, or Blind Like Me, all one word, at txucom.net. Also, if you have ideas for future shows, include them in your email. We look forward to hearing from you. And please tell your friends about the shows. Thanks again from all of us at the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me.
Thanks for listening to The Blind Handyman. If you have an idea for a topic or project you would like us to discuss, let us know at our address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, back to the show with Don Patterson.
Okay, guys. Hey, man, it was neat having Gordon on. Huh?
Yeah, it was.
As always is.
This guy is one knowledgeable individual about the subjects that we get him on to talk about. He knows it.
Yeah.
He's done a little bit of everything in his lifetime. He really has, and very successful in business in several different areas.
Right. Okay, well, you know, it's fall time here in Lufkin and around the world, I guess. Fall is coming. I've always said sometimes you get lucky. In the summertime here, it's really, really hot sometimes. In the wintertime, it's really, really cold. But every once in a while, you'll have a beautiful spring and a beautiful fall. And we've had a little warmer than usual fall, I think. But today, we're sort of getting our fall days. I hope they last. And, of course, what
today
I want to talk about today is planting. And you go, planting in the fall. How can that be? You know, you're supposed to plant in the springtime. But we're talking about trees. And I guess for listeners that have been around a while that know that the warden and I are building a house, and they're coming on with it, by the way. Got the gables, the rafters, and joists up, and they'll probably deck it here pretty soon.
All right.
Getting the walls, the plywood that goes behind your brick and the insulation, and probably next to be the windows, and then they'll probably deck it and roof it
So they're moving.
They're coming on with it, aren't they?
I figure dry it in at least in the next 3 weeks.
By the next blind weekend.
It should be
well dried in.
Anyway, and so on our lot as a boundary, we will share a boundary line with two lots. One's a 3-acre plot. That's about what size our lot is on one side, and then at the back there's another 3 acres. And so I talked some on the program about fencing and what a large process this would be, you know, to make all materials out of fencing.
Yep.
And so we've also been looking into trees, you know, and trees will kind of serve two or three purposes, actually. They'll give you a little shield from view. You can hide a view. If you plant the right kind of trees and enough of them, they can be a sound barrier.
They could.
And then they also, you know, enhance your place by their beauty, their natural beauty, depending on which kind of trees you plant. And here, where we live in the city of Lufkin, Texas, I'm sure through some sort of federal grant that goes around the country from time to time, we've been in sort of a town or urban beautification or urban renewal, especially along our freeways and around our loops. And they've gone in like, and they're doing brickwork at intersections, making it decorative bricks. And, uh-huh. and all in many areas they have planted trees. And these are the one of their most common that they're planting. Well, there's two. They're planting crepe myrtles and or these Bartlett pear trees. There's a real fast-growing Bartlett pear tree. Now, I'm not sure if it just produces flowers or fruit, even though there is a Bartlett pear.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that these would ever be fruit trees. Excuse me.
And where does one get these trees?
Well, I'm saying I'll touch on another thing. Then, or you can just go in and plant, like, pine trees, too, if we're talking about our noise barrier. And here, because we live in, the forest, pulpwood, plywood, lumber, capital of the world in parts.
No kidding.
Or at least our part of the little world. You can get free trees from the Forest Service.
Really?
But now your Bartlett pears or your crepe myrtles, and the price will vary, obviously, according to size and place. You can get them at any well-stocked nursery. There's especially some nurseries that are devoted to trees, but even at places like Lowe's and or Home Depot, and I'm not sure that Walmart's, they sell plants. I don't know that they sell trees.
Yeah.
The kind of trees we're interested in right now, I'm going to plant like a pear tree, these pear trees, just like the city has, and they start out in a bucket, and the ones I'm looking at now are probably 7.5-8 feet tall.
Whoa.
The diameter of the bucket, of the dirt around the root system that you buy is probably 18 inches, 24 inches or something.
Yeah.
And to plant this tree, you need to dig a hole, they say, four times as big as that bulb or that dirt, the root system. Not as deep. You want that top of that, of their dirt that's in their bucket, to be at ground level. So you don't want to dig it four times deep. But just four times big a hole. I'd say you put a lot of root stimulator in there.
You want the dirt to be loose, in other words, around
it. And then you set take the pot off. They're usually plastic. You can cut it off or something. And set your whole thing in there with the dirt, the ball, I guess, the root. And then you fill back in the hole that you've dug. And they say the early spring or early fall is the best time to plant these trees.
Well, if you get a trailer load of these big pear trees, call me, because I need to come and get one.
Well, I'm going to
tell you. For the front yard.
No, I don't know that you can get them for free. That was what I was going to tell you. The price of these puppies is about $40 a tree at that size.
Okay. Well, that'd be okay. I could still use one.
And the little crepe myrtles, you can buy them around white or pink. They're beautiful flowering trees, and we're talking probably $9, $10 for a medium-sized, well-developed, good-started tree.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm going to be doing this fall and into the early spring.
And back to the pear trees, when you say quick growing, what are you calling, like, quick?
Oh, I would say, but I don't know what maturity would be, but I would say a really good-sized tree, if you plant the 7.5 or 8 foot tall, you'll have a 12 or 14 foot tall tree maybe in a couple of years.
Oh, that's super.
And you trim them and bush them. I don't know that they get much bigger than that. They're just
That's neat. That's just right. All right, man.
Well, I believe we've done it.
Yeah, and so, Thomas, does anybody want to give out any email addresses before we go? Y'all keep in touch?
Well, we gave Hotmail. If anyone wants to join the Blind Handyman list serve, just send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, right. And in case the creator and producer does not materialize within the next couple of weeks, we will be taking applications for producer and creators. So
I've had a good time today. I don't know about you.
It's worked fine.
I totally enjoyed it. Yeah. Thank you, Don Patterson.
Yes, sir.
And Don Shaw.
Yeah, man.
And Phil Parr.
Wherever you are.
Wherever you might be.
We couldn't have done this if he hadn't gone on vacation. You know?
We couldn't have. Good way.
What's that? Where's the phone book? How many bars are there in Vancouver? Where is
I bet there's
the
a bunch.
The creator will probably be back. In fact, I'm sure he'll be back next week, ladies and gentlemen. But until then, we'll just say goodbye for now, and we'll see you next week. I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
All right.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.